All right, 806 FM Talk, 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. We check in with Quinn Hillier in just a second. First, though, I want to catch up with our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, and talk about the heat, Dr. Bill. I mean, a excessive heat warning listed for today. What's that all about? What does it mean?
Well, these are dangerous levels today as far as the temperature and the humidity. We're going to see readings of about 97 or 98 degrees this afternoon here in the city, but the heat index could be as high as 117, and very high humidity levels all along the Gulf Coast. In fact, across all of Alabama, it'll be up near 100 degrees up in the northern sections of Alabama and the lower levels, around Mount Cheehaw. Where it'll be up to 98 to 100 degrees. So it's quite a heat wave for the Gulf Coast. There will be a few thunderstorms developed this afternoon. And then tonight, we're only going to cool to the upper 70s to around 80 degrees, and it's back up into the mid-90s tomorrow, with, again, heat index readings as high as 112, possibly 114. The good news, though, we will see quite a few thunderstorms developing tomorrow afternoon as a cold front approaches. That front will move through Alabama tomorrow and make it to the Gulf Coast and then stall. So temperatures will not be as hot for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It'll be in the low 90s. A few thunderstorms are likely in the afternoon, and the humidity not as high as what we're going to see today and also tomorrow.
I mean, heat index of 117. I mean, this is, I mean, obviously it's August. I mean, no big surprise, August on the Gulf Coast, but 117, my goodness.
Yeah, that's amazing. Oh, yesterday at Brooklyn, it was 119 for the heat index and 110 out at the airport. But it looks like most areas are going to see higher heat index readings this afternoon.
All right, Dr. Bill, we'll keep an eye on it and check back with you later on today.
Okay, Sean.
Our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, with an update on the heat heading our way. 117, 119. At this point, you know what? Air conditioning is not a convenience. It's like life support. That's got to have it the same way underwater. You'd have to have a scuba tank to be able to get air at this. Those of y'all working jobs outside, obviously we don't need to tell you to take precautions today. But how about this? You're in our thoughts. I mean, wow.
You know, I've had some work I need done on my house. So I've been having some construction guys come over, take a look at it. And you would not believe how happy they are to see that the work I need done is inside of my house where the AC is. So when it came time to schedule them, they're like, yeah, we can be there. You know, whenever. Yeah,
sure. Oh, you've got
the hottest
inside,
time of day.
You got an inside gig, like where the AC's running? We're in. So, yeah, I mean, 100. So we'll talk about this throughout the day. But remember, this has actually even got a name. It's not just a hot day. Excessive heat warning from the National Weather Service. All right, let's check in with Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com. Also, read his work in the Washington Examiner and his trilogy, the Matt Jones trilogy, available on Amazon right now. Hey, Quinn.
Good morning. Well, Hollywood told us that some like it hot.
That's right. And is that? Are we going to get in a transgender conversation there or cross-dressing?
No.
Okay, just checking. Just checking. Because wasn't that Some Like It Hot? Didn't they have Tony Curtis in it?
And I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Because I can't watch old movies. But all right, let's talk about this. So, Some Like It Hot. I'd say the heat. Here's my transition. Y'all ready? The heat is being turned up on politicians in Alabama over this toll move for the bridge, huh? How about that?
It is, and they're not responding well. But then again, you know, they've fumbled this issue for 25 years, the politicians and the bureaucrats. Look, there are two things that should be happening at the same time. Number one, our senator, Richard Shelby, who is chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, should be able to get us both on merit and on politics on the list for more federal funding. It is a pathetic dereliction that he has not been able to do it. But number two, you know, and I can go through all the arguments, by the way, about why he should be able to do it and how. Maybe not time for that. But number two, for the portion, maybe 50% instead of 93%, maybe maybe 50%, that should be the state's portion, the state should bond it out, period.
Yep.
No toll. This is an interstate. This is a crucial thing for hurricane evacuation. This is crucial for the economic driver of the state down here, which, you know, the two coastal counties are the economic driver of the state, maybe us combined with Huntsville and the aerospace up there. And there is absolutely no reason that we should be paying tolls when Birmingham is putting in new loops and they're not paying tolls, when Montgomery just did a major renovation and loop and they didn't put in tolls. The state should pay for its portion of it by bonding it out and paying it off over 30 years.
And talk about the bonding, and I also want to circle back, talk about Senator Shelby. I'd like to also mention, because you mentioned 25 years of this project, and in the op-ed from Governor Ivey last week, basically I felt like she was pointing a finger at me, said people that say, you know, just wait a year and see if there's more federal money, you know, don't realize or something the fact that this has been 25 years in the making. That would be my argument that why it's okay to wait an extra year here before we sign the deal, to see if we could get some more federal money if President Trump is reelected. You know, maybe there's a chance. I mean, it's not like we got a pile of money we're risking right now.
No. Well, I mean, if our state and national politicians from Alabama and our State Department of Transportation had been on the ball for the last 25 years, we would be much farther along in the process and we would already have most of the funding. But, okay, that's water under the Ahem Bridge. but to say that now, because they fell down on the job, people should pay $6 each way is an absolute logical atrocity. This is every single bit and more of an imperative as any of the other road projects in the state. It has been federally identified as a priority for 25 years. There is absolutely no reason the state can't say, okay, we just raised the gas tax 5 cents, we have GOMESA money, we have we got a lot of BP money, and we can find a way to afford it if we pay it off over the next 25 or 30 years. You can get a 30-year bond, the interest rates are low, do it now, start to lead, Governor Ivey. Seriously.
You talk about the bonding process and GOMESA. Also, I know that GOMESA has been discussed and the trust fund's been discussed. And, you know, an idea where you would pay. I don't know why this is a bad. I don't know why they're not moving forward with this, because you could. I would want the state to charge itself interest to keep the money at the current value, right? So when it's put back in down the road, it holds the value of the day it was removed. But that rate is going to be a lot lower than, you know, what a private entity needs to get return on investments. I don't know. It really baffles me why we don't go that way.
It's beyond baffling. What it shows, though, is that for whatever reason, the rest of the state ignores the fact that we are such an economic driver in these two coastal parishes and
counties. We're not parishes.
Consistently treats us as as an unwanted part of the state, as something entirely different. And it's time that stopped. It is absolutely time that stopped. And it starts with state politicians, but it's also Richard Shelby, who is from North Alabama, who unless you put it, we keep saying it, unless you put his name on something, he doesn't come through.
Oh, but I don't care. He can put his name. It's still not going to happen. We put his name all over the bridge. I mean, it could be, in bright neon lights up there where everybody can see him, you know?
Absolutely. Meanwhile, at the state level, all Governor Ivey needs to do is say, legislature, this is important. We just raised the gas tax 5 cents. This has been federally identified for 25 years. Find the money. You don't have to do it all at once. You bond it out. We have the bonding authority. We have the bonding capability. We have balanced our budget, and let's do it.
Quinn, if Governor Ivey were going for reelection coming up the next cycle here for governor, do you think she would be saying the same thing that she's saying right now?
I don't know. I just I don't understand it. I really don't understand why this is life and death if you have a hurricane. This is a choke point for a hurricane evacuation. It is a life and death thing. It's not just a daily thing, although it's a very bad daily thing, but it's a life and death thing for hurricane evacuation. And every single state politician in the legislature, in the governor's office, and in Washington who does not make this a priority is falling down on the job.
Yeah, Quinn, yesterday on the Midday Show, Pepper Breyers was on, and I think he made a pretty interesting statement here. He said, you know, as a Mobile guy who's lived in Montgomery and Birmingham and Huntsville, he started thinking about how to explain the plight down here to try to get people in the other part of the state engaged. And he said, hey, pick a roadway that what he said to me that stood out is that people from other parts of the state, if you say Mobile and Fairhope, they don't see those as connected in a metro. They see it as two different, a city and a town that they know in the state of Alabama. And he said, you got to do a better job of letting them understand why it's important, the connectivity between the both counties. And we pointed out, we got in the discussion, for example, like Birmingham, to be able to say, okay, it would be like tolling a road from North Jefferson to South Jefferson County, or from Shelby County into Jefferson County, like a 280 or a 20, you would have to pay a toll, you know, somewhere that they go every day. Or in Huntsville, he made a, you know, or Montgomery. I mean, I said even in Tuscaloosa, a lot smaller, but Tuscaloosa and Northport, to get people to understand what it's like. You know, this isn't just something we take on a vacation. This is part of a daily travel for our business.
I've got an idea. Put a toll between Birmingham and Tuscaloosa, so that every time people want to drive from Birmingham to an Alabama football game, they have to pay a toll. Let's see how they like it.
Yeah, well, but even in that, yeah, you're right. That gets attention. But even more, finding some roadway, like a 280, something that people, like a bedroom community in Shelby County, then a lot of people work in Jefferson County, you know, put that toll in between there on 280, make it $6 either way. The people in Birmingham would come unglued.
Yeah, they would absolutely come unglued. I'm telling you, Governor Ivey's op-ed was a slap in the face.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Good to hear you say that. I thought it was...
It was an absolute slap in the face, and there's no excuse for it. There's absolutely no excuse for it. And we've all in the past several weeks, past several months, jumped all over the Department of Transportation. I can tell you, when I moved here 21 years ago and started covering this 21 years ago, the Department of Transportation, even then, was obstinate, was uninterested in listening, was a horrible outfit to deal with, even trying to get answers covering it as a newspaper guy. They are also at fault, but why isn't there a governor who can shake up the Department of Transportation and make them fly right?
Well, just to add, too, just, you know, factually, that the head of ALDOT works at the pleasure of the governor. And
Bingo.
That position could be, you know, changed at the whim of the governor. It's not an elected position. It's not a, you know, it's somebody who works at the pleasure of the governor. So, hey, Quinn, can you hang on for a second?
Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
We're going to come back because there's a lot of global unrest out there. And we're going to kind of go around the planet with Quinn and talk about some of the issues that you've been hearing about in the national and international news. Coming right back, more Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Back to our discussion with Quinn Hillier. QuinnHillier.com, the website. If you want to go read your daily work, I know you compile it over at QuinnHillier.com, but where's the best place to see what you're doing day by day?
Washington Examiner. Just Google Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner, and you will see 10 or 12 pieces a week, believe it or not.
Man, you are churning them out. You sent an email to us and talking about a lot of unrest in the world. I've been focused on what's going on in Hong Kong. That's really gotten my attention, but you list Russia, Kashmir, Jerusalem in that as well.
Yeah, look, we have not seen this many major public protest with this many people in so many hot spots in the globe at the same time in a long, long time. You're right to focus on Hong Kong, and I'm about to write a piece today. I'll give a little preview of it about what Trump can do. You know, I'm not a fan of Trump's trade war. I think it's just horrible policy. It's actually also hurting us here with Airbus, by the way. But he can put it to good use. He can say, he can link it to Hong Kong and say, look, China, you let Hong Kong have its level of autonomy and its freedoms that you promised us, and I will drop this trade war. If you crack down on it, I will lead a worldwide effort to punish you with trade that's not just the United States, but is the entire world. But the carrot is, you back down, let these people have their freedom. Of course, that Hong Kong will still, quote, belong to China. Maybe they pay a tax to China or something like that. But you let them have the autonomy you promised, and I will drop this trade war right now, and we'll take the minor disputes over intellectual property to the World Trade Organization. We'll work through existing structures. We do think we're not being treated right on intellectual property, but we're not going to escalate.
What about
that's the message? You link it, and you solve two problems at once.
What about Russia? What's your take on that?
I just became aware of it, that there were 50,000 people in the streets of Moscow. I mean, look, as problematic as Putin is militarily and otherwise and diplomatically around the world, his economy has never performed very well in Russia. It's still not performing well. In terms of economy, in terms of population, Russia is a declining nation, and the public over there apparently is finally getting sick of it. And frankly, I think it's a good thing that they're protesting. I'm afraid what this butcher might do to those people, but the fact that there is unrest in Moscow tells us that there might be hope for maybe forcing a change there.
How about the unrest in Jerusalem?
You know, the Temple Mount, just as a matter of history, was a Hebrew area long before Muslims even came close to claiming any connection to it. And right now, the Muslims are up in arms because Jews who have a right to go there are praying there. And the Muslims say, well, it's a blasphemy for them to pray there. Well, excuse me, it's a holy site for both. What's going on is just another in these clashes where if the Jews want to live and let live over there, the Muslims say, no, you can't. And right now, the tensions are very high, but obviously you can tell what side I'm on.
Yeah, I'll put you down as not undecided. And what about Kashmir? As you talk about this much-disputed land there, yeah, Pakistan and India, what's going on with Kashmir?
Well, I mean, Kashmir has been in dispute for, what, 65 years now, something like that, 62 years, but in dispute, but formally under the control of India. And, I mean, it's a constant burr under everybody's saddle. I am not enough of an expert to understand why it's now boiling up, but the fact is that it is boiling up, and if we had an engaged diplomacy, we are technically allies of both. We don't have to send in military or anything like that, but we could be playing peacemakers diplomatically in a way that we're not, just, you know, sort of shuttle diplomacy. And I wish we were doing that.
I mean, both, the reason why I told folks to pay attention to this, I said they both have nuclear weapons. I mean, if you want to just get down away from the idealistic and get pragmatic, they both have nukes.
They both have nukes. And look, to say we should get involved diplomatically and to say we should be the world's policeman, but it is to say that we have a long history, starting with Teddy Roosevelt, who won the Nobel Peace Prize for doing diplomacy between Japan and Russia and helping them achieve peace. It didn't involve U.S. arms or anything like that, but we should have, st- still a moral authority where we can say, hey, look, guys, maybe a third party, a neutral third party, can hear you out. You know, let's see what we can offer. And I don't see us doing that, and I don't understand why we're not.
All right, Quinn, remind folks, too, where they get, where do you, what is that term they use? Curate, where do you curate your stories, and how do they find you on social media?
Well, I curate my stories once a week at QuinnHillier.com. Please go up to the yellow button in the upper right and subscribe. It doesn't cost you a penny. And then I am way too often on Twitter at Quinn Hillier.
All right. Thank you, Quinn. We'll talk again next week. Sounds caress my ear. Not a word I heard could I relate. Story was quite clear. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday. Sean and Dalton, Dr. Bill, Kane, Kelly gets headlines. And we get your calls at 343-0106. 343-0106. We'll get back to that. A lot of text to run through here. Supermom says, after earlier this morning reminding me of that bag that my wife has, the Rosie the Riveter bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to, I said, it's bigger than a purse, but it's not luggage. And the word is tote.
A tote.
Yes. So Supermod informed me that's called a tote.
Because you can fit your life in its totality inside of those bags. They're so big. You can just fit everything you have.
You're just making that up.
Yeah, I did, did make that up.
But she goes on a later text to say, because we asked this question, we'll get to it in the online opinion poll question. I think immigrants, because if you didn't hear yesterday, the press conference about maybe some kind of like a means test here for immigrants coming in, here's Ken Cuccinelli yesterday.
Well, we certainly expect people of any income to be able to stand on their own two feet. And so if people are not able to be self-sufficient, then this negative factor is going to bear very heavily against them.
Okay, so that's Acting Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and this is, so people understand, this is a discussion of legal immigration, legal immigrants, and them having to prove that they will be self-sufficient coming to the United States. They won't need public assistance when they come here. Okay, so then I get the text here. I think immigrants should definitely, from Supermom, I think immigrants should definitely have to prove their self-sufficiency. A person would not just pick up and move their family to another state without a plan, a job, a home, a way to support their family. People who want to immigrate to America should be no different. Financially, America cannot support everyone. Our veterans need Trump and immigrants. Our veterans need Trump and immigrant needs. Okay, our veterans needs Trump. Immigrant needs.
Oh, okay.
And no pun intended. Very funny. This is, okay, this question, we asked this in the online opinion poll question, and I think this one is more nuanced. I go back to the discussion of illegal immigration, and when people, I'll be in a discussion of the rule of law, and you have to have, like, if you say this, you have to cross the border this way, you have to enforce that. That is the rule of law. At the same time, long, long since have been talking about this on the show, that legal immigration is a different story. I'm actually somebody who's a proponent of opening up more channels of legal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Now that, so there I will go from one group that I may, that agree with me on illegal immigration and cracking down. And then I shift and those people go, hey, what are you talking about? Because I am a proponent of increased legal immigration with some, you know, with some caveats there, but increased legal immigration. Are we full? That's one of the questions, maybe the rough way to put it. Is the United States full? And only because what they're doing in this system, if you're self-sufficient and you have certain skill sets and all that, you can immigrate. If not, you can't. So that's that idea that, hey, we're going to high-grade the people who come in to the United States,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's almost the idea of, hey, we're a republic that is full. Nobody else come in right now. You know, is that, should that be the... Should that be how we decide who gets to come to the United States?
I think it's interesting that this comes out now, you know, as the president and his administration battle against undocumented immigrants, illegal
right.
immigration,
right.
as they battle that.
I see these things so differently. I really do.
And I guess, I don't know if it's necessarily a penalty, but to penalize those that are doing immigration legally as you're trying to combat illegal immigration, I don't know if that gives any of the people who are thinking of immigrating illegally any more incentive to go through legal means.
Right.
I wish, you know, I mean, we hear stories all the time of people who are on welfare and getting money from the government who really could be out there working. And I'm talking about Americans born in America. There are so many holes already in the welfare system. Maybe this is a way to start working at whittling that down, people who should be out working and are capable of working. But I kind of wish they would plug the holes that we have currently right now in the welfare system.
Before adding new.
Before going after legal immigration. Maybe this would be something down the road they could get after. But you never know, you know, down the road that they would have this ability. Maybe right now is just the perfect time to start putting some of these new laws into place.
Let's look at some numbers here on our 1-800-GOT-JUNK 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Should legal immigrants have to prove self-sufficiency as a qualifier to enter the United States? 72% of y'all say yes. So, I mean, some people say no on that. It's a big question. Once again, this is not about illegal immigration. This is about legal. What do you do? I mean, these are folks doing it the right way. Do they have to prove they will be self-sufficient? Because part of me wants to talk about, you know, here we are, this great shining city on a hill here for people all over the downtrodden, all over the planet. At the same time, I turn around, I read stories. I think it was out of the Ukraine, and it's only one, and somebody chimed in. Yeah, they have the birth tourism where people come here and have their children, so they're citizens. But this story out of the Ukraine, there was like a school. Okay. I don't know if it's a Vox article. I got to go back and find it. There was people were training, going to like a school to find out what to do when they got here. It was basically get here, get to the United States and immigrate, and then say this, this, and the other thing, and you'll get on public assistance and they'll put you in a home. And you know, if you're coming from somewhere in Eastern Europe and where times are real tough, it's real tough to be poor, and you come here and you get set up with public assistance, it's probably a big lifestyle boost coming here. And so people were, like anything, people are going to scam the system. That doesn't mean everybody's scamming the system, but it means, I guess, you know, if you leave it open with no means testing, you do leave yourself open to people that have a ulterior motive other than just freedom. But at the same time, I don't want to, you know, push away people that do it right. I'm a legal immigrant proponent that do it correctly, that want to come here for freedom and an opportunity and a better life. To me, there's a lot more gray in this one than there is a question around illegal immigration.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we've seen stories, you know, especially over the last couple months with immigrants who have come here legally speaking out against illegal immigrants and saying that, you know, we did it the right way. We went through a longer process than we needed to if we would have done it illegally. So you have people who have come here and gone through the entire process of becoming American citizens that did it the right way. I also wonder how this would affect, you know, the legal asylum seekers, because you have so many people right now claiming asylum. And
Is it crying wolf with so many people crying asylum that may not be truly the definition of it?
Right.
So.
But if you have true cases of someone who is leaving somewhere where it's just awful, truly awful, they're on the run for their life, and they are granted asylum in America, I wonder if this green card rule would affect them also.
All right, let's go to the phones at 343-0106, and Tim is in Fairhope. Hey, Tim.
Hey, good morning. I think you guys just hit my point right there, the last couple of comments you made. The biggest issue is a lot of people have the feeling that when people come here illegally, they get health care, baby care, free food, WIC program, free doctor, free baby delivery. And people who are having to pay, or struggling, you know, minimum wage jobs, whatever, having to pay those bills themselves. And you can just come into this country with no paperwork. And they've, trust me, I've heard of this. They have learned the system. They pass paperwork to each other, within each other, and say, hey, you know, do it this way, and you'll get free milk for your baby. Which, you know, humanitarian, I think that's where we get into the conflict. Everybody wants to help everybody. But if you're doing it illegally and you're taking advantage of the taxpayers' money, and you're getting to go to college. You know, the what do you call those kids? The dreamers.
The dreamers.
I mean, they get to go to college. I can't even hardly send my kids to college.
But what about the legal? Let's talk about legal.
Legal
immigrants. To me, it gets different. The illegal immigration issue, to me, is one of rule of law, and you breaking the law to come in. But let's talk about legal immigrants. People that, like Dalton said, went through, did the things, did it correctly. They're now legal immigrants into this country.
Right. And they have, I think, like you said a minute ago, they have the same opinion. We did it legally. I'll tell you the truth. I was from a family who came here in the 60s and did it the right way and never was on any kind of supplemental anything. You know, we did it. We had a job before we got here and the rest of the family came, and we've all worked. We've never had any problems or government assistance.
From what country?
Mexico.
Very cool.
Yep.
Very
and
cool.
It can
so,
be done. And
so
it
you're
can
first
be
generation.
Do it the right way.
You're first generation.
I am. Yes,
very
sir.
Cool, man.
Yep.
I dig it, man. Tim, thanks for the call.
Yes, sir.
There
all
you
right.
go. First generation. Cool stuff.
Awesome.
Let's go to Simpson in Mobile next. Hey, Simpson.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm like Dalton.
Yep.
I agree with that too. I think we need to crack down on the sorry junk bunks around here that are taking advantage of the system. That's what we need to do first. And also, I mean, I can agree with some of what he's trying to do to the tour, but I've actually become friends with a couple of Mexican guys out in the workforce here,
mm-hmm.
you know, associates. And they have told me what's going on. They told me that the illegals coming to this America know exactly what to do and what to say, because everything is going to be given to them for free. They know that. That's why we've got so many illegals coming to this country.
But what about legals?
I do agree. I mean, I know black guys and white guys that take advantage of the system, and they yep. walk around with $100 bills in their pocket, but yet they're on food stamps, and they're on house Section 8. So the rent's paid for. The house is paid for. They're on... The power bill, even, for God's sake, can get paid for. They know the system is flawed. Bottom line. Y'all have a great day. Listening to you, Sean.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Simpson. Appreciate the call. Well, coming right back to the phones, but I do want to make sure, that's why I keep saying it, we're discussing what was rolled out yesterday in that presser is about means testing for legal immigrants. You wouldn't know to means test an illegal immigrant. This is legal. These are people that do it the right way, that fill out the paperwork. Should they prove that they will be self-sufficient once they get here? All right, that's also our online opinion poll question on the front page of FMTalk1065.com. We'll talk about those numbers when we get back. FM Talk 106.5 at Mobile Mornings on a Tuesday. By the way, get the language right, because I don't see this every day. Excessive heat warning coming out from the National Weather Service for today. Heat indices 117 and up. Dr. Bill said that Brooklyn yesterday it was 119.
Man, we need alarms ringing behind you you talk about that.
Use a meteorological term, not... That's stupid hot.
Stupid. Stupid hot. Oh, if you're out there practicing football, running laps for volleyball, you know, any of those fall sports.
They got to call practice today. They got to call practice.
I don't know. Some of these high schools have nice indoor facilities now, so they can still get the work done. But, yeah, be careful out there.
Oh, indoor, yeah. But see, we didn't have indoor. It was always 1st of August, football practice started. The name of our practice field, the Skillet.
Ooh. Our indoor facility was hotter.
You had an indoor facility in Clark County?
A gym without AC is what I'm talking about.
Well,
it was hotter than outside.
Yeah, they'd be like, let's go out to the 112 degrees to cool off. Let's go to the phones, and Francis is in Foley up next. Hey, Francis.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a comment about this being able to support yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It is already a law, and it says that if you're going to immigrate, you have to be able to support yourself and take care of your family. And if you want to sponsor someone to come into this country, be you just an individual or an organization or a family, you have to be able to prove the same thing, that person will have resources available and take advantage of them to support themselves and not be taken care of by our government.
It says the public charge rule is a part of the Trump administration's broader push to favor skilled immigration applicants and those who are less likely to rely on public assistance. But, Francis, people are talking about, how do they game the system then? That there's so much gaming the system that so many will come in and then be on public assistance. And once again, y'all, if you're hearing this, we're talking about legal immigrants here.
Right. But your illegals, they do it.
Yeah, the illegals do it. Yeah, fine. That's
just like the people, the Americans do it.
Oh, agreed. Listen, there are people scamming everywhere. I guess I'm more focused right now on this question for the legal immigrants, because illegal immigrants break the law and come in, and there's a prior crime to it. So I'm not surprised there are other crimes. But I'm looking at people who do things legally. And I am, you know, there's a lot of times that people lump in illegal immigration issues and legal. I'm actually pro-legal immigration. I think we're a better country with more people here that come from different places that aspire to come here. But not if they're coming to game the system.
No, definitely not.
All right, Francis, I appreciate it. Francis says, so there's something already in law. Why would they say, and maybe they're reinforcing the law? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would make a difference in this battle against illegal immigration if we showed the difference in legal and illegal a little bit more and you know, propped up the stories of people who came here legally, mm-hmm. did things the right way, and are now hopefully living good lives. Just the thing with this new law that the president's been talking about with legal immigrants having to show that they are self-sufficient, and I don't know how big of a slice of the legal immigration pie this would be, but it kind of reminds me of, you know, leaving college and trying mm-hmm. to get a job. So many jobs in the job description, you know, the prerequisites, they say you have to have experience, 3 years experience, mm-hmm. 5 years mm-hmm. experience, and that's kind of, you know, it's difficult.
And you go, wait a second, I'm trying to get in.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my first job out of college. There's no way I would have experience. I kind of look at this in the same, if you're coming to America and you do it the legal way, wouldn't you need a little bit, unless you've talked with some companies before you come in and you have a good job lined up, wouldn't you need a little bit of time to get your feet under you once you get to America? I wonder how that would work into this.
Yeah, I don't know. And if you have, you know, if you, right now with this economy, okay, it's a different story. When, you know, the natural cycle happens at some point, some people think it's next week, some people think it's in years or whatever. Economy cycle. It's good and it'll be bad. In a good economy, you wonder if there are companies clamoring for people to hire and can't find Americans to do it. You know, can they somehow, and I know they do it to some degree in tech for sure, mm-hmm. but in other jobs say, hey, we have this opportunity and for, you know, barring any non-performance on the job for the next year, this immigrant has this job.
Right.
And we'll give him this job. But then you get a tough economy, and you're not going to have many people being able to do that. John's in Mobile up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Question. Back in the days when everybody came through Ellis Island, weren't people asked where they're going to stay, who they're going to stay with, to make sure they were not going to be a burden on the government?
Well, I know that, you know, the family story on the Sullivan side, there were seven of them living in an apartment in Hell's Kitchen, New York, as people moved here. And their skill set, they probably made something up, you know, because I don't think they had much beyond farming, you know?
But this, I mean, this is not new.
No, it's not new, but
people.
But we let people in. But we, let me say this, it's not new. There wasn't a means test. I mean, maybe where you're going to go, but think about my ancestors. Think about the Irish came in here in droves, the diaspora that came in. They didn't have a whole bunch of skill sets that were going to be applied. Maybe some did. They all didn't have skill sets that are going to be applied to the economy, and somehow, thank you, Tammany Hall, we got got a foothold here in these United States. I bet. I appreciate the call. We'll pick this back up at noon today. A lot of toll talk as Representative Shane Stringer joins us. He was in a meeting with the governor recently. We'll talk to him about that starting at noon today on Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher next.